Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, welcome again here on Circles of Change. You know, there's no better way to start the year or continue on from our conversation we just had about noble intentions to actually play an even bigger game, and that being in taking personal responsibility. I welcome on the show now Dr. John Izzo. John, how are you this morning?
Very good. How are you?
Couldn't be better. I'd like to give a brief intro. John's an author, community leader, and inspirational speaker. He's a best-selling author of The 5 Secrets You Must Discover Before You Die, and which led him to hosting a 5-hour biography channel TV series. John has spoken to over 1 million people on 4 continents about living a more purposeful life. So thank you, John, for including Circles of Change in that mix, by the way. And his Brevian books also include Awakening the Corporate Soul, 4 Paths to Unleash the Power of People at Work, and The Value Shift, The New Work Ethic and What It Means for Business. John truly has devoted his life and career to showing leaders how to create workplaces that bring out the best in people and discover more purpose and fulfillment in life and work. For over 20 years, he's done pioneering work, and also his client organization has ranged from high tech to high touch, hotels to hospitals and government agencies to entrepreneurial startups. And before that, before establishing a firm, he was a senior OD consultant for Kaiser Permanente, also vice president of the Einstein Consulting Group. He earned degrees in psychology, religion, and a PhD in organizational communication. So today, though, we're pleased to discuss his newly released book, as in just the last couple weeks. It's called Stepping Up, How Taking Responsibility Changes Everything. So indeed, get ready to our listeners to be inspired to a greater vision, new insights, and equipped with really some practical strategies to create things for the future. So, John, again, thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome. And I got tired listening to things. Like, you know, you listen to go, well, did I really do all those
things?
Did
I do
those things?
Yeah, and not only did I do all those things, but boy, now the responsibility for me to even do more, right?
Indeed. Well, you know, it's if you're a learner, you know, it's, as I am, and I'm sure you are as well, you know, many of your listeners, you know, you're always looking for that next frontier of conversation that you want to have with yourself and with others, and in a way that says every book comes from what we want to learn and grow ourselves.
But, you know, I think this new book of yours, this idea of each of our taking responsibilities, there's such a mantra and blibber blabber out there about blaming. Blaming and pointing fingers to others. Why won't the government fix this? What about so-and-so dealing with bullies at school, etc.? And I really applaud the timeliness, not just the thought behind the release of your new book.
Yeah, I think it really is the right book for the right times. And as you said, there are really two things going on that to me are interesting. The first is, as you said, you know, a kind of pervasive, you know, a finger pointing and feeling that, you know, someone else is really responsible or to blame. And you see it not only in, you know, in the society, but it's even in relationships, mm-hmm. you know, where people say, well, if she or he would only change, everything would be fine. And, you know, and students and parents saying, well, if the teacher would just be different, my kid would be different, you know. And then I think the second thing that really makes this book very timely is I think there's also a kind of pervasive a feeling of powerlessness that mm-hmm. people have in our society, a feeling that the problems that we're facing are almost so intractable that, you know, how could one person really make a difference in making change? And so I really wrote the book with both those intentions. One is, how could we really shift it and say, what can I do about the things that concern me? And the empowering shift that happens when we point at ourselves instead of someone else. But the second thing is, I wanted to go out and find, you know, stories of ordinary people mm-hmm. who had stepped up to create extraordinary change to show that, in fact, it's happening all the time all
it
around us.
It absolutely is. And, in fact, for those of you who are streaming and those who want to make a note, you're going to want to go visit John's site at steppingupforchange.com, because right on there he has a wonderful selection of YouTube videos and vignettes that actually were your journey to even get to the book, right?
Well, exactly. You know, I really, you know, became inspired to write this book, you know, 2.5 years ago, when, I spent 6 weeks in Uganda working with an organization called Bead for Life. And it was started by three women from Colorado who, interesting, were at New Year's, who just at New Year's time set an intention, a mother, a daughter, and a friend of the mother's, and they set an intention, we'd like to do something for the world this year. What a great intention.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing is, later that spring, they were in Uganda, they visited a refugee camp and met women who were living in incredible poverty. Many of them had AIDS or were HIV positive. And to make a long story short, they just bought some beads from a woman who was working for $1 a day in a rock quarry, and the woman made these beads out of recycled paper, and she said, you know, I have these great beads, but there's no market. I have no one to sell them to. And these three women just said, well, I wonder what we could do about that. And at first they just thought they'd get a local tourist shop to do something to buy her beads. But when they came back the next day and saw there were 50 women who were in that same position, they said, well, that won't be enough. And to make a long story short, they came back to Colorado. They started holding bead parties and selling the beads of these women. And now it's 5 years later, 8,000 women have been helped to start their own businesses in Uganda. They have a staff of 200 people, Ugandans in Kampala. Bead parties are held all over North America and Europe. But it's, and that's one of the stories that's on the site. You can actually hear the story of these three women who just set this intention, who had no retail or sales experience or experience doing any of what they wound up doing. But as they said, when you step up, the world tends to step up with you.
With you. So, lovely put. Yeah. And it isn't, you know, it also, you know, certainly those examples, in fact, so many of the not-for-profits that have, you know, the nucleus, the seed that was planted was just something like that, you know, that I really want to help this refugee family, you know, find new furniture for their apartment. And before you know it, 10 years later, they're now a big, huge distributor of gifting of furniture to funnel to other, you know, nonprofits. It's great stories. But also the ones you quoted, I thought the ones about youth, the story about the two high school students that stood up.
It's a great story. And, you know, interestingly, Dr. Larson, we surveyed people for stepping up. Why don't you step up? Kind of take more initiative in your life. And the number one reason was people said, you know, because I'm only one person, it won't matter if I step up. And the interesting thing is, that's why one reason I wanted to find these stories of people who had stepped up. And the one you're referring to, two high school students, you know, seniors who, you know, one September heard about a bullying incident on their way home from school. A young man who had his first day of school, he was a ninth grader, and he'd happened to wear a pink T-shirt, ironically because his mother was a breast cancer survivor.
Yeah.
And he got beat up and bullied all that day, and the bullies basically said, look, you know, homo, if you wear that, pink T-shirt ever again, you know, we're going to beat the crap out of you. And they just happened to hear about it, Travis and David, on their way home. And Travis said, you know, we've been here 4 years and we haven't done anything about bullying. We've watched it, but this has gone too far. We should do something. And again, to make a long story short, they went out and bought 50 pink T-shirts and tank tops. They got a hold of as many of their friends as they could. The next morning, even they were surprised that 280 of the 300 or so students in the school showed up, men and women wearing pink, many from head to toe. The bully, when he saw the sea of pink, threw a garbage can in the cafeteria. He was so upset, but as Travis said later on national television, not a peep was heard from the bullies for the rest of the year. And, you know, there's two great things about that story. One is, you know, these two young people just did something. And I have a chapter in the book called Do Something, Do Anything.
Right.
You know, just take a step. The second thing is they had no idea the ripple that they would start. There are now pink shirt days in 21 countries all over the world just because two 16-year-old kids. And if you go to our website, steppingupforchange.com, and you hear me tell their story, you'll see a picture of them. And what I love is they're kind of geeks themselves. These are not like, you know, the football coaches, you know,
the most popular kids, whatever, yeah.
They were just normal kids who just said, you know, let's step up. And I have a simple definition of stepping up. It's seeing a need and deciding you're the person who can and will do something about it. And you know, and I think it's true at every level, you know, in a relationship. you know, something happens when instead of saying someone should do something about, we turn it around and we say, I wonder what I can do about this. And it's very empowering. I like to remind people, my book's not like a finger, parental finger wagging at you saying, be responsible. It's actually, think of how empowering it is to stop worrying about what anyone else is doing, but to focus on yourself.
And I would think for our listeners who are operating within companies and organizations, boy, is there ever a place true to form to say, well, those guys in marketing, if only they would do what? Or if my boss could just give me the da-da-da-da-da. That this advice, it transcends whether it's community service, personal life relationships, or certainly what you're doing in your workday.
Oh yeah, and so because I've spent a lifetime working with companies and organizations, the book has lots of examples of in business, and also for the book we surveyed people, why don't you step up at work? And so there's some great stuff in there for leaders as well. And you know, interestingly, there was a recent survey by LinkedIn of 17,000 people all over the world to ask them their biggest pet peeves at work. And the number one pet peeve was people who don't take responsibility and finger point. And the second biggest pet peeve was people who complain all the time. And so in many ways, it's also a great, stepping up is a great prescription for you to be successful in your career. Be a solution person. Be someone who doesn't point the finger at someone else, but and says, look, let me tell you how I think I'm contributing. Let me tell you how I think we can solve this. And so I tried in the book to pepper it with those kind of examples, because you're right, every week I hear leaders say, I wish my people would just step up and take initiative and not act like victims. And so it's a great prescription for a bad career.
But I also, though, you might turn that right back to the leader and say, well, what have you done today to help your people understand the importance of them stepping up? Or perhaps there's a gap in their being coached. And stepping back and say, whoa, you're right, I have responsibility for this in multiple layers.
Exactly, and that's why we did. We surveyed people to say, why don't you step up? Number one reason, leaders not seeking our opinion, but just making decisions. And the second most common one was leaders dismissing ideas without consideration. You know, there's a great story in the book about the Starbucks Frappuccino. You know, which we all know is a delicious drink and made a lot of money for Starbucks. What most people don't know is that it almost never happened, because it began in the late 1990s when two frontline employees and a frontline manager in Santa Monica were in a hot summer and noticed that people were leaving Starbucks to go to a local competitor who had a cold coffee dessert drink. And they floated their idea to their manager, who it went all the way up to the head offices in Seattle, and on a 7-1 vote, Starbucks voted against launching the drink, and basically said to these frontline people, no, you know, it's not a good idea, you know, you got it wrong.
Right.
Make a long story short, these people were like a little dog on a bone. They were calling their manager every day, look, we're telling you, you made a mistake. Finally, they started experimenting with the drink, even though they'd been told no. And it was only after a month and a half, when they had sold $1 million of gross sales in two little stores in Santa Monica, that Starbucks reconsidered it. But here's a great question for a leader is, how would those people do in your company if they disobeyed the rules, if they went out on a limb?
Right.
You know, how quickly do we dismiss ideas without consideration? So that's a $3 billion idea that almost never happened.
Well, the other piece of it, of course, is those people then get labeled as heretics, mavericks, the problem children. Why can't they stay just where we tell them to stay? You wonder, why do they leave?
Well, exactly, and that's why for leaders, one of the most important thing is what happens to those people. So at Starbucks, to their credit, that frontline manager is now on the senior team of Starbucks. Her manager, who fought for the idea and went out on a limb and let them take a risk, even though the senior office had said no, wound up running Starbucks International, and the main guy who led the campaign to say no wound up getting fired. So I talk in the book that the truth is constructive irritants in most companies wind up getting further, but as a leader, we have to always ask, am I dismissing ideas? Am I giving people a seat at the table? And again, in the book, lots of stories of how leaders can do that and how we can take initiative ourselves.
Sure. Well, John, there may be some people who are saying, though, well, yeah, that's all fine and great for people that have discretionary income, discretionary time or whatever. But, you know, I've got enough on my plate that I'm just really struggling to keep my head above water. You have a marvelous story there about a homeless man who turned to really do something to save the world.
It's a beautiful story, you know, because one of the chapters in Stepping Up is, who am I to step up? And, you know, one of the people I interviewed, you know, said, you know, every time you think about stepping up, there's a kind of two voices that go off in your head. The one is, you know, who are you to step up? You're going to fail. And besides, you don't have the credentials or you don't have the time, whatever it is, the money. And the other voice that says, you know, go for it, try. And he says that that first voice is not your friend. And the story of Ken Lohier is such a beautiful story. He was literally a homeless dumpster diver, as he described himself. He was an alcoholic. He was diving dumpsters for a living to get bottles out. And he had a front seat to the incredible amount of waste, how many things were thrown out by our society that are not recycled. And one day he was in a coffee shop at a drop-in center, and he was complaining to a local minister about, you know, how much was being thrown out and couldn't be recycled, and also the way that homeless people were treated when they had to take bottles and back to stores. And the minister did a great thing. While Ken was complaining, he turned it around. He said, well, Ken, that's great, but what would you do about it if you could do something about it? And Ken said he'd never been asked that question. He said, well, I guess if it was up to me, I'd have a day when we'd invite people to bring all the bottles that can't be recycled, and we'd show people how much is actually being wasted. And so he personally organized this day. He literally had hundreds and hundreds of people showed up that day to turn in these bottles. The minute the church gave them $1,500, so the max you could get was $10. They wound up being in the newspaper. People saw this mountain of garbage. The government made a promise to expand the recycling program a few weeks later. They then went on. He cleaned himself up and started a bottle depot that only employs street people, and literally they have employed hundreds and hundreds of street people and now have an urban farm as well. And it's a wonderful story about that passion is really more important than pedigree. And so many of the people I feature in the book, like those two kids, like Ken, were just ordinary people like us. And by the way, you might wind up doing something really big, or maybe you wind up just befriending one homeless person in your community, or maybe you just wind up picking up litter in your neighborhood or getting your neighbors to recycle. It's not about always doing something big, and you know, these people didn't set out to do something big, but often they wound up doing it. But I agree with you. And on the website, steppingupforchange.com, you can actually meet Ken and see his story and be inspired by actually hearing him talk.
Well, John, you're not a first-time author, right? You've done multiple books, and I'm certain you would agree that every one of these children you've given birth to takes your life in a new direction. Do you already have a sense of what this is going to do for you personally as you continue your work and reshape your own thinking?
Well, yeah, you know, when I wrote the Five Secrets You Must Discover Before You Die, where I interviewed these 300 people, over 60, who others had said were the wisest people they knew, it really sent me on a trajectory of having conversations with places like Humana about vital aging and how do we keep people have a sense of purpose all of their lives. And this book, you know, I really wrote in a way because I want to be more and more in the conversation of how do we get people to step up. And for me, part of it is dedicating my life to telling and celebrating the stories of people who are stepping up. That's why on the website you can actually send us your video and have it posted. So we're trying to really not just tell the stories in the book, but tell and celebrate these stories of people who are stepping up. And it's challenged me to step up as well. In about a month now, I'm going to be launching an international pledge of asking people to take a pledge to do three simple things: to use no plastic water bottles, no plastic straws, and no plastic shopping bags. A simple pledge that anyone could take. It wouldn't ruin your life. It'll make a huge difference in the world. So it's really challenged me, the interviews with these people, to say, how can I step about something I care about deeply? So, you know, I think that's really what it's about at the end of the day, is these stories challenging each one of us, including myself, to do that.
Well, I think the other piece of it, too, is also to be mindful that you might be setting on the direction to go do X, but lo and behold, it's really about M, N, and Q that actually starts the ripple effect. And so perhaps for some people that start on, quote, on that noble intention, to be careful to not think that that's the only reason it's going to happen, or that, you know, like you say, you publish a book, or for me, I start a radio show. Before you know it, there's all these other things that I didn't even dream of that were possible that could happen.
Yeah, it's very true. Torkin Wakefield, who one of the founders of Bead for Life, tells that story about meeting Millie Grace in that refugee camp in Kampala, and she said, "We had no idea that day we'd met our destiny."
Mm-hmm.
And life is like that, right? We don't, our destiny winds up sometimes just showing up on our doorstep, and being open to where it will take us, is a big thing. And, just back to something you were asking earlier, just this core idea of responsibility. Mm-hmm. People say, what can I do practically? And here's my number one advice. Anytime you say, find yourself saying, someone else should, or hear someone else say, someone else should, turn that around. If it's yourself, say, what can I do about this thing I care about? If there's not enough romance in your relationship, what can I do to be more romantic? If there's morale in your workplace is bad and people are in complaining mode, what can I personally do to turn that around and really move in a different direction? If there's something concerns you in your community, just ask, what can I do? And every time someone else is complaining about anything and saying someone should, say, well, that's great, but ask that question that minister asked Ken.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, what do you think you could do about it if you had the power, which you do?
This whole idea, in fact, that's the first chapter of the book, is this, the five rows of responsibility. Why don't you hit on those points real quick?
Yeah, I think number one reason people said that they didn't step up is because they said, I'm only one person. Mm-hmm. And, if you think about it, most of us only influences about five rows around us. It's actually a story from an experience I had on an airplane where I was sitting with a bunch of grumpy, complaining people, and this one little boy just smiled, and he changed the five rows around him. And in the book, of course, a longer version of the story. And it struck me, this is how the world works. It's in a company, right?
Right.
We each influence about five rows in a community, in the world, and yet almost every problem is a five rows problem, from global warming to morale or service in a company. If we can just each act in our five rows, that aggregately, and I talk in the book about this concept of aggregate influence, we forget. Mm-hmm. I don't use a plastic bag. It may seem meaningless, but millions of people make that choice. I stop complaining at work or do something about work-life balance. Maybe it doesn't mean much, but if hundreds of people step up and do that, suddenly the aggregate has an impact. But it all begins by saying, what can I do in my five rows? Because that's the place you're in. You can't change anyone else. But you can do what you can do in your five rows, and aggregately it winds up being the way the whole world or a company changes.
Exactly. In fact, it changes in a sustainable way. In other words, not just the one quick tick. It's something that could repeat itself on a sustained way.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing, that I talk about in the book is this idea of the responsibility ripple, that when one person steps up and takes initiative or changes the energy, that it creates ripples, and others begin, like as a story about a woman in Naples who stood up to the mafia, and refused to pay protection money. And Silvana Fucito took this courageous act, but it inspired thousands of other people in Naples to step up, and now they've turned the tide on protection money in Naples, all because one shopkeeper said, no, I'm not going to pay. And it began to create a ripple. Other people step up, just like those kids stepped up to the bully. Two kids stepped up, and 300 other kids said, you know what, if they'll step up,
we're going to go right
maybe
with
I will too.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. John Izzo, so nice to have had the opportunity to talk to you again. For our listeners, it's www.steppingupforchange.com. The name of John's book is indeed Stepping Up, How Taking Responsibility Changes Everything. John, we'll look forward to watching the ripple effects that are going to come big time as you continue to do the work that you do. And thank you so much for contributing to our show today.
Well, thanks for your good work, and please have people send us their stories and their videos for the site. We'd love to spread the good word of how many people are indeed stepping up and making things happen.
Very good. Thanks so much, John.
Thank you.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580. 544-2580.